From the University of Texas at Austin, KUT Radio, this is In Black America.
I think what made me unique as a baseball player was the fact that I approached every game a little bit different than just the average ball player. I used to see baseball players sometimes stand in the mirror or make sure that their socks was this high, they combed their hair, et cetera. I felt like, you know, that there was absolutely nobody, that walked out on the pitching mound that could probably get me out. Now, that wasn't true all the time. But I felt confidence in my ability to play the game. I felt like there was absolutely nothing in baseball that I couldn't do.
Major League Baseball legend and Hall of Famer Hank Aaron. Recently, Aaron was on the University of Texas at Austin campus to speak at the Tom Johnson Lecture Series. Prior to joining the Atlanta Braves front office, Aaron enjoyed a 23-year major league career, during which he rewrote baseball's hitting record book. He holds more major league batting records than any other player in the game's history. On May 17, 1970, he became the first player to compile both 3,000 career hits and more than 500 home runs. Along with Frank Robinson, Aaron was inducted into the Hall of Fame at Cooperstown on August 1, 1982. As an entrepreneur, Aaron operates Popeyes and Krispy Kreme restaurants in Atlanta and Columbus, Georgia. Aaron sits on the board of the Atlanta Braves, DSW, Medallia Financial Corporation, and the Atlanta Falcons Board of Advisors. He is a member of the Board of Governors for Boys and Girls Clubs of America and is a member of the Board of Counselors for the Carter Center. With his wife, Billy, he is the founder of the Hank Aaron Chase the Dream Foundation. I'm Johnny O. Hanson, Jr., and welcome to another edition of In Black America. On this week's program, the Tom Johnson Lecture Series with Hank Aaron, Part 2, In Black America.
We didn't make much money in Milwaukee. And this is a true story, I remember after I had been in the big leagues for a few years, I remember that Matthews, Warren Spahn, and myself said, look, why don't we, you know, I think it was $23,000, And I think Spahn was making somewhere about 60 or something like that. And Eddie was making about 40. And I said to myself, you know, I've never made this much money in my life. I don't know what I'm going to do with it. I said, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. What we're going to do, we're going to all write the commissioner of baseball and have him, we're going to deduct all, we're going to take $15,000 of my money and I'm going to tell the commissioners to have it where I can draw it once my retirement comes. And you know, he sent us a letter back and he told us, said, I cannot let you guys do that. $15,000 for Matthews, $15,000 for Spahn, and $15,000 from you. He said, I can't do that. He said, what happened if the team go bankrupt?
Hank Aaron is considered one of the best baseball players of all time. Aaron broke Babe Ruth's home run record when he hit his 715th home run on April 8, 1974. He later set the new MLB record with 755 career home runs. Born Henry Louis Aaron on February 5, 1934 in Mobile, Alabama, the third of eight children, born to Estella and Herbert Aaron. Aaron ascended the ranks of the Negro League to become a Major League Baseball icon. He played as an outfielder for the Milwaukee/Atlanta Braves for nearly 23 years. Over that period, he collected more RBIs and more extra base hits than anyone in history. For 21 straight years, he was named an All-Star, and for 20 consecutive years, he slugged at least 20 home runs or more. 1957 was Aaron's best season. He hit .322 that year with 44 home runs and 132 RBIs, captured the National League's MVP award, and led the Braves to their first World Series championship since 1914. Recently, Aaron was on the University of Texas campus to speak at the Tom Johnson Lecture Series. The discussion was moderated by LBJ Presidential Library Director Mark Updegrove. On today's program, we conclude that conversation.
I don't know whether it should be an asterisk and let them go into the hall. Is that what you mean?
Well, not so much the Hall, but how should we view those records, and including the Hall?
I think they ought to be forgotten about, really. That's what
really?
I think. Yeah, I think they should be forgotten about. Yeah.
They're simply not legitimate.
They're not legitimate, you know, really. When you see somebody, because I played the game 23 years, and I know how hard it is for you to hit 20 home runs, 30 home runs.
Sure.
But what we were seeing back in the era in which you were referring to is players hitting 65 and 70 home runs. That is impossible to do. Now, I'm telling you, I know it. You can do it. You can do it with the help of somebody helping you or something helping. But you can't go out here and play the game of baseball and hit 70-some home runs, especially in the major leagues. You might do it. It'd be hard for you to do it in the little leagues.
Right.
You can't do it in the big leagues. You just can't do it because you're playing with guys. You're hitting against pitchers who is probably as good as you are as a hitter.
Yeah.
And you just can't do that. That's a lot of home runs to hit.
One of your contemporaries on the field was Pete Rose. Should Pete Rose be inducted into the Hall of Fame?
Well, I think Pete Rose have to feel the same way that the guys that was taking steroids.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, it's a funny thing. And Pete and I know Pete. I happened to play against him, and he was a damn good ball player. I mean, a very good ball player. And I had a long talk with Pete. I talked to Pete, and I told Pete, I said, Pete, I said, if you were guilty in any kind of way, I said, what you should do is to come clean. Just say, I did something wrong. I ask for your forgiveness. And I said, you'd be surprised at this country. This is the most forgiving country in the world. I said, all you have to do is say you're sorry, because we all have done something wrong. But he decided that he didn't want to do that, and that's where he is today.
Lesson is, listen to Henry Aaron.
I don't know. I don't know whether he wanted to listen to me. Evidently, he didn't.
What athletes do you admire today?
There is quite a few of them. It's fortunate. This country, especially here in the United States, we have some very good athletes. I mean, these kids today is just absolutely great. I mean, when I played baseball, I weighed 170-some pounds. The most I ever weighed in my life in baseball was 185 pounds. Of course, you can't tell it now. These kids today, even my grandson, my little grandboy, he is 16 years old, and I'm telling you, he's much taller than I am, much bigger than I am. All these kids are just absolutely fabulous, you know, really.
Is there someone who you think is the role model that you'd like to see athletes be today? Is there somebody who sort of exemplifies what being a role model is all about today?
Derek Jeter in baseball, I would say. I don't know too much about basketball, but I would have to say Jeter, as far as an athlete, probably would be somebody that I think that I would like to have my kids copy and be as.
It strikes me that he has your work ethic.
Yeah.
He came out there to play every single time. He played injured. He was a member of a team. He was never made himself the star.
That's right. I consider myself being very lucky at playing baseball. You know, I played 23 years, as I've said before. And I played about 8 of those years in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And the reason I bring that up is because even back then, in playing with players like Warren Spahn, Eddie Matthews, and et cetera, who is now in the Hall of Fame, I felt like I was lucky. We didn't make much money in Milwaukee. I think, and this is a true story, I remember after I had been in the big leagues for a few years, I remember that Matthews, Warren Spahn, and myself said, why don't we, you know, I was making, I think it was $23,000, I think I was making. And I think Spahn was making somewhere about 60 or something like that. And Eddie was making about 40. And I said to myself, I said, you know, I've never made this much money in my life. I don't know what I'm gonna do with it. I said, I'll tell you what I'm gonna do. What we're gonna do, we're gonna all write the commissioner of baseball and have him, we're gonna deduct all, we're gonna take $15,000 of my money and I'm gonna tell the commissioners to have it where I can draw it once my retirement comes. And you know, he sent us a letter back and he told us, say, I cannot let you guys do that. $15,000 for Matthews, $15,000 for Spahn, and $15,000 from you. He said, I can't do that. He said, what happened if the team go bankrupt? And I never thought about that, but $45,000 is what he was talking about. He couldn't do it. And nowadays, what do these players make now? These players make $1,800,000, and I couldn't defer $15,000. But it's a funny story. After that, we played for a few years, and we won two championships in Milwaukee, two championships. And I never forget that after we won the first, beat the Yankees 7 games, I remember that, I was trying to raise a family, and I needed my money. And they were slow at bringing the money. And our cut, each player cut for winning the World Series back then was $8,000. And I said to myself, I said, boy, I need my money. I need it bad. So I went to John Quinn, who was the general manager. And I asked him, I said, when is the check going to come? He said, just take your time. It's coming. So sure enough, about 3 weeks, it was 3 weeks late, but I got it. But I got all my money, $8,000, I think. And I carried it to the bank. And I never forget, I put it up to the teller. I said, Mr. Aaron, said, what would you like to do? What, checking account or saving account? I said, no, nothing. I said, I want you to count every nickel of it out, put it on the counter, and I'm going to put it in a sack, and I'm going to carry it home with me. I'm going to have a chance to look at this for a while. No way. he counted it out, gave it to me. I put it in a sack, carried it to my house, closed all the doors, and put the $8,000, put all the money on the bed. And I looked around and made sure nobody was looking at me, you know. And I said, boy, I looked at it for a while. And I said, oh, this is more money than I ever had in my life. $8,000, you know, I mean, this is, whew. I said, oh, I called my mama up and I called everybody up. And then finally I decided, I said, well, Hank, you better start paying some bills, son. And when I started paying bills, I ended up, I think, with $150. But that's a true story. That's a true.
What is your most indelible baseball memory?
A lot of people won't say, you think the home run, I think the one thing I think about most and the thing that I am proud of is the fact that I was, in my baseball career, the 23 years that I played, and you mentioned this before, is the consistency in which I played the game. You know, what you could see, you could go out to the ballpark today and see me hit a home run. You might come out 2 days and see me hit another one. Those are the things that I think that made me feel proud of my career more than anything, was the fact that I was consistent in what I was doing.
As Coach Garrido suggested, we not only admire you for your grace on the field, but because you're a civil rights hero. Given what's happened in Ferguson and the fact that racial strife is alive and well in the United States of America, what can we be doing to heal the racial divide?
I think we can do several things. I think we can start judging people for the way they act rather than by the color of their skin. I think you can start, I think people can start understanding that we are all our brother's keeper, you know, no matter who we are. Judging people simply because of the color of their skin is certainly not what you should be doing, you know, really. I think there's things that no matter who you are, no matter how you look, you know, I mean, I think you should be judged on your character rather than by what you do.
Just what Dr. King said.
Yeah. Just what Dr. King said.
So how do we achieve that?
I think you achieve that by, well, I think one thing you can do is to understand who is next to you, who's sitting inside of you, who's your brother's keeper, you know. And rather than judging someone simply because of the fact that, you know, he doesn't have as much as you have, doesn't have a car, not driving the same car that you drive. Today, I heard you talk about Tom Johnson. You know, I mean, Tom, I remember when I first started working at CNN, and I went to him and talked to him about what I should do. And he did one thing for me. He said, we're going to create an airport channel with another friend. And the two of us, we started, he gave me the chance to do that. So I think that that's what we need to do. We need to understand that although all of us don't have the knowledge of doing all the things that we want to do, but if given the opportunity, I think we can. That's all. You got to make the playing field just a little bit level.
Have we progressed on the issue of race as much as you might have imagined when you hit that ball and to begin the 1974 season to break the...
I think there's a lot of things. There's a lot of... We still have a long way. We have a ways to go. We still have a ways to go, you know, in spite of, and of course, I'm not here to talk politics or try to get involved in politics, but I do know that in watching... When I first started playing baseball, there was absolutely no one in this country, no one that I can think of would ever say that we would have a black president, you know, no matter who you talk to, you know, and regardless to whether he is or the people out here think that he's doing a good job, I have some things that I don't exactly like the way that he's doing, but by the same token, you know, I think that we've come a long ways in that regards in some ways, you know.
Yeah. You were given the Medal of Freedom by President George W. Bush in 2002.
Right.
I wonder, what is your greatest hope for America?
Let me just say, I would like for people to understand that, as I mentioned before, the playing field, just make the playing field level for everybody.
Yeah.
And just give everybody a chance. Because I look at my situation. If I had not had someone like Jackie Robinson coming before me and giving me an opportunity to play the game, then that would have been lost talent.
Yeah.
It would been lost. So I think that in some ways, I think that that's what happened.
Yeah. The montages I mentioned to you earlier included a picture of you being greeted by President Johnson in his Oval Office. And that's after a tour that you made in South Vietnam, visiting with troops with four of your Major League Baseball counterparts. Can you talk about that experience of meeting President Johnson? By the way, I will mention to you that Henry has not seen that photo, and we'll see it later tonight. But that's one thing that hasn't made its way to your office.
And I haven't seen it.
Yeah. You know, what do you remember about that?
I remember going to Vietnam. It was Joe Torre, myself, and who else? Killer Brew, Stan Musial, and that was one or two other. We went on what we call a high neighbor tour, and here's the story. The president at that time made all of us lieutenant colonels in the Army. And the reason for that is because he said that if something happened, that we would get the same pay if something happened while we were there. We were in danger. You know, that was things that happened that I can tell you that I was a little shaky about. But anyhow, I went over there with all these guys, and at that time, Stan Musial, only one of us had a Nikon camera. That was when Nikon first came out with the cameras. And I remember Stan Musial taking all these pictures over there. We stayed over there 14 days, and every one of them was in the front line. The front line. We wasn't in the back. We was in the front, and that's where we were. And we were over there to entertain the troops. When I say entertainment, I don't know what I was doing. We was talking baseball, and that was. But they were happy to see us.
Yeah.
They were very happy to see us, and I'm so happy and I'm so glad that I was over there. And I stayed there 14 days. And the most amazing thing, the scariest thing about the whole thing, was the fact that when I was over there, I saw little kids, not American kids. These were kids that was Vietnam. Little kids over there, must have been 12, 13 years old. And this is what really hurt me more than anything. When I saw these kids carrying guns, 13 years old, carrying this some years ago, carrying automatic rifles and having scabs on their pelts, on their heads and all this, you know. So I kind of felt kind of bad. And I thought that, I thought we did a good job. And Stan Musial, after taking all these pictures, and I saw Stan, and he's no longer with us. And I saw Stan, I said, Stan, I said, what happened to the pictures? And he told me he took, every one of those pictures that he took was the floorboard of the helicopter. There was no pictures of nobody else. There's a floorboard of the helicopter, you know. So I didn't have any pictures at all to show that I had been to Vietnam. But I've been there. My wife and I was able to take a tour over there a few weeks ago. About a couple of years ago, with some friends of ours. Beautiful country, beautiful, and I really enjoyed it. Really, the people were very nice.
You've had a truly remarkable life. What is your proudest accomplishment?
I think the thing that I think about my accomplishment is what I try to do is try to give back. You know, I felt like God has been good to me. He's given me a chance to do some great things. And I try to give back. Later on, I guess you might hear about my foundation, Chase the Dream Foundation. In that foundation, we try to help kids in college. And I feel every day that I can give back to, you know, whatever money or wealth that I have, don't have that much, but whatever I have, my wife and I have, we try to share with other people. You know, we try to share with those who are less fortunate. And I feel like every day that I'm blessed beyond when I can be able to give other people, no matter what it is, no matter what it is, you know, I feel like it is not mine anyhow. You know, it belongs to everybody who had a hand in it and shared with me.
Talk about your foundation, the Chase the Dream Foundation.
Well, I can tell you how we got started, Mr. Tom Johnson. I have to bring him in, and my wife, the two of them. I can tell you the story how we got started. When I retired from baseball, I was trying to keep a foundation called Chasing a Dream Foundation. I was trying to fund it by going to card shows, signing autographs, and putting money into the foundation. Until one day, my wife told me, she said, we ain't gonna ever do anything. This is never gonna work. She said, let me handle it. Let me do one thing. Let me try to have a birthday party for you. I said, fine. So I guess she went to Mr. Johnson, Tom. And she talked to Tom, and Tom and her decided that they were going to go to some of the high rollers, Coca-Cola and et cetera, and sell them tables for $50,000 and $60,000. And when she told me this, I said, for what? I said, we're trying to have a birthday. Well, let's just keep it like $50 or something, you know. No, she said, let me handle it. And sure enough, Tom and her got together, and I'm telling you, Tom, to this day, you know, I feel like I've been blessed to know you. The night, fast forward, the night of my dinner, I have never seen anything like it. They had over 1,000 people. They raised over $1 million. That was it? Am I saying right, Tom?
$1,200,000.
That's what they raised.
Did you put it out on your bed, Henry?
She, And Tom, and I have to say that if it not for Tom, and sometimes Tom, I cry about it even now, you know, if it hadn't been for you, that foundation, I would still be out trying to sign autographs. Thanks to you that you've done so much for the kids. I mean, you helped them so much. And I certainly appreciate it. And my wife, the two of y'all, did a work. And thanks to you, thank you for lending him to us. Please, thank you.
It's a testament to your legacy that there are so many young people in the audience tonight.
Yes.
What would you tell young folks who are chasing their own dreams?
I would tell them that no matter what you decide to do, whether it's baseball, football, basketball, whatever it may be, that remember one thing, that there is no shortcut in life. Absolutely no shortcut. I think that I've seen too many of our kids think that simply because they look at me and they say, well, they not now, they look at me and they say, oh, he hit 755 home runs. How did he do it? I can do it. I can do the same thing. Well, they probably can. But then they'll look at somebody and they say, I got to do it. I got to do it. No matter what happened, I got to do 755 home runs. And they'll do anything to get to that. But I would say that success in life doesn't mean that you be successful today and tomorrow you're successful. That means that you got to take one step at a time. And that's what I would tell them. That's what I try to tell all young people, that when you start looking for shortcut in life, that's when you're going to get yourself in trouble.
Do the young people that you come in contact with give you hope?
Most kids that I've talked to, yes.
You mentioned Tom Johnson, and Tom said of you, Henry, you never disappointed us, not once. Long after all of us are gone, your name, the name of Henry Aaron, will symbolize what I believe it really means to be a genuine American hero. I want to thank you not only for coming here tonight, but for all you've done to foster the American spirit by chasing your dreams.
Well, I certainly appreciate it.
Thank you so much for being here tonight.
Thank you.
Hank Aaron, Major League Baseball legend and Hall of Famer. I would like to thank the Tom Johnson Lecture Series for their assistance in the production of this program. If you have questions, comments, or suggestions as to future In Black America programs, email us at jhanson@kut.org. Also, let us know what radio station you heard us over. Remember to like us on Facebook and to follow us on Twitter. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station or of the University of Texas at Austin. You can hear previous programs online at kut.org. Until we have the opportunity again for technical producer David Alvarez, I'm Johnny L. Hansen, Jr. Thank you for joining us today. Please join us again next week.
CD copies of this program are available and may be purchased by writing In Black America CDs, KUT Radio, 300 West Dean Keaton Boulevard, Austin, Texas, 78712. That's In Black America CDs, KUT Radio, 300 West Dean Keaton Boulevard, Austin, Texas, 78712. This has been a production of KUT Radio.